I'm here with a cup of coffee, a glass of iced tea, and I'm about to light a cigarette.
This what do they call it? I'm fucking lost for words already. I can't get my fucking words out.
That's our cold open.
The simple things. That's what I was looking for. Things. The simple things in life, man.
But you it is the simple things. And I am quarantining and staying in the house. I make quick little runs if I have to quick check because they have mostly anything that I might need right now. Haven't had the need to go to a grocery store in a couple of weeks, so I'm doing my part.
Have you been to Quick Check?
Yeah. I was just there today.
I don't remember the last time I do remember the last time I was there, but I've lost track of the weeks, man.
They've been open.
I know everything's pretty much open in terms of what, stores?
Supermarkets, yeah, that's about it. There's no, like, regular retail open.
No. You can't go to the mall and buy a shirt.
No.
You know, not that kind of
stuff. Right. No. Just necessities.
Yeah.
So last week, like I said, man, last week went well. I enjoyed it. I had a good time again, man. It was good to hear.
Your description of David Lee Roth went over pretty well last week. Like,
yeah.
You got a few laughs from people, man.
Well, you know, it's funny because then I went further back and was looking at some images. And from 2015, you remember the disaster on the Jimmy Kimmel show? He had that bandage.
Is that when he hurt his nose?
Yeah, he had like the Band-Aid across his nose or a bandage across his nose. And just, I was like, what the fuck is this guy? Did he get a nose job? I loved what you said. And I listened to it, you know, I listened to the show after we recorded. I love what you said about him possibly having some sort of a health issue because he's very – he can't turn. He can't move. Like we said, he's a robot, you know?
It's just – I don't know what happened to him. Like, he used to just be so laid back and cool, and now he just looks funny, man. Like, he stands there and has that big smile on his face. But – I don't know, man. He just lost the moves, man. He doesn't have Elvis in him anymore.
No, definitely
you
not.
Know? There's no Elvis in him anymore. All the Elvis has been drained.
He was like Elvis and Bruce Lee mixed together. He throw those aerial kicks and shit.
Yeah.
But now he opens his mouth and he's got these big fucking white hanging out teeth. I'm like, what is it? He had dental work, obviously. I mean, I have horrible teeth, so I know he had dental.
This is just going to be like the Rip on David Lee Roth podcast.
No. But I'm leading it somewhere. I don't want to keep going on Dave. I love Dave, and everybody knows I love Van Halen, and I don't want to keep ripping on my poor Dave. But I just had to continue with some of those things from last week, because we were long last week, and I felt it was short, so it was crazy. But it's leading. I know we wanted to do a little of gun to your head type scenarios. You still want to do something like that?
Yeah. Gun to the head is always like our go-to gig, man. Whenever we were always hurting for topics, and you know the funny thing is that we always said that, but we never really had to do it. You know, we never had to really do it as an emergency. You know, but before we get to that, I mean, is there anything? The industry is shut down now. So is there anything really current music to talk about that doesn't amount to a death count?
No, I mean, away from the death count. We did have some deaths. I'm going to stay away from those.
Yeah. Bill Withers is, you know, it definitely wasn't due to the virus. I wish the headline would keep identifying him as the guy who made Lean on Me.
Yeah.
he was so much more than that, you know.
Yeah, he was.
You hear about the artists who, you know, do it their way, so to speak. And, you know, he was a guy that was not really motivated by the glory of the whole thing, you know, of fame. And he walked away from it when he was, you know, he was doing well. He was on a career. I use the word trajectory for the second week in a row, but it could have kept him productive and successful, man. And he decided that he was done.
Yeah.
And he never regretted it. He never looked back. He found other things in life. I don't know too much about him. I was reading about him a little bit. He was part of, you know, he grew up in, what was it? I wrote it down somewhere. Where the hell is it? Slab Fork, West Virginia in 1938. And I don't know that town. I don't know West Virginia. I know he was he grew up in pretty much a rural town where he experienced, obviously, like so many people did, segregation, racism. You know, his grandfather had been born into slavery.
Yeah.
You know, he had done military service. I found out he was a aircraft mechanic in the Navy. I mean, he basically had a very full background before he entered music.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
So, you know, I don't even know how into music he was growing up. You know, I don't know that he was. But, you know, yesterday, I think was it yesterday or 2 days ago, I posted it. And then I got to thinking, I was like, you know what, this guy is... These two songs, I mean, two or three, he had like basically like, what, three hits?
Ain't No Sunshine.
Yeah, and I'm like,
Lean On Me.
Yeah, actually, I
didn't realize just the two of us. Maybe he wrote that?
Was it a different
version of the song? I actually just looked it up right now.
I don't know that it's the same song. Are we talking about, was it Grover Washington or was it?
Yeah, that's it.
Was it Grover Washington that made that?
Associated Acts, Grover Washington Jr., yeah.
All right, because I was going to say, yeah.
Maybe he had a writing credit on it.
In the overall big picture of it, you know, he was, I mean, was he known for those songs? Yeah, he is, you know, he's known for those songs. They were big hits, you know. But I don't, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm cheapening things when we call them hits because lots of shitty songs become hits.
Yeah.
You know, but they were songs that, you know, they became completely ingrained in everything that is best and decent about humanity, I'd say. Nothing offers uplift and hope the way Lean On Me does. You know what I mean? And that's why it's so fucking universal, man.
And on the flip side of that, nothing really says how soulful and sorrowful you can be with Ain't No Sunshine. How down in that rut you can really be, especially over heartache.
Yeah.
Which is 90% of popular music, I think. There's still some heartache in there.
Those songs were more than just hits, man. It's like Dylan said, you know, in this age of fiberglass, I'm searching for a gem. And I think that's what we had in him, man. You know, the guy was an American treasure, man, I'd go as far to say. Again, I didn't know all that much about him or his career, you know, but I definitely wanted to get that in there before we moved on.
And I know you said, you know, the death cast. We always get the label for that.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of the death part, I'm going to go with the new Pearl Jam record was just released. And, you know, right now I'm still listening to it. So, you know, I have it. We'll see. I got to listen a little bit more. The first two songs, one I have kind of mixed reviews on, and the other one I do like a lot. So
yeah, you got the whole thing.
I got the whole record.
You listen to it, yeah.
Yep. I need a couple more nights at work.
That?
It, like I said, the first I really didn't listen to the whole record yet. I need some.
Okay.
I only listened to about two tracks. And they're the two that were released, Super Blood Wolf Moon, which I kind of enjoy, and Dance of the Clairvoyance, which is a really different song for Pearl Jam.
Is that the one I posted a few weeks ago, man, and I was saying something to the effect of, because it struck me as Pearl Jam finally leaving their comfort zone and doing something that was a beat that you don't really hear too much. It was almost sounded like a dance beat. Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Yep, that's the one.
Yeah. So we'll get a full Rock Under Fire. You'll have the full official Rock Under Fire review next week.
I don't know if it'll be Rock Under Fire's review, but it'll be my review.
Yeah, well, that's cool. You are a voice of the podcast, man.
Well, I agree. And we both are. I don't want to go saying that Rock Under Fire puts the thumbs down.
Pat Ivanitsky's review.
Yeah.
For the Rock Under Fire podcast. It's kind of like John Perilla is doing his review for the New York Times or, you know, what was it? You know, Dave Marsh reviewing something for Rolling Stones. You put your stamp on it.
Throw a shout out there to our guy Jay Lustig, too.
And I'll just make the disclaimer saying that this is Patrick Ivanitsky's review. It doesn't necessarily mean that Mike DiRico agrees with him.
Yeah.
or this doesn't speak for the Rock Under Fire podcast itself. But we'll put Patrick Ivanitsky out there. But anyway, so yeah, it's you know, I trust your judgment on Pearl Jam, man.
I mean,
far more than mine, man, because you followed them pretty much the whole time. I lost touch with them after Yield.
Yeah, that was a long time
ago.
So
you know what's what and what's the, I don't know, valid assessment of what this album is and,
sure.
versus what it's not and all that stuff. So, I mean, I can say, yeah, I like it, I don't.
Yeah, fair enough.
Now that it's April, I was talking to Nicole about a week ago. She was on our she was a guest on our show about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That Nicole.
Yeah.
And, you know, that night when we were all out, you know, for Rob's party, that was February 29th. And at that point in time, they had just announced the first person to die of this thing, right? Everything was still open. Nothing was canceled yet.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
She asked me at the party, like, you know, she said, you know, what's your take on this whole virus thing? And I said, you know, I really hope I'm wrong. You know, and I remember thinking like this, I mean, tomorrow's what, March 1st? And it was, you know, March 1st was the next day. And I think I said, I think that by the end of March, we're going to be a much different country. There's not going to be anything like, in a sense, all the stuff about the primaries, everything's going to be gone. There's going to be no music, there's going to be no sports. The only thing they're going to be talking about on the news is going to be one story. Everything's going to be reduced to one story by the end of March. She was like, yeah? And I was like, yeah. You know, I said, I keep saying, like, I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. So even though it's been like 24/7 gloom and doom all over the news, man, it's that, you know, pop culture has not stopped evolving. And what I mean by that is that, like, in the face of all this bullshit, people now have a second thing to post about. And every time I go on Facebook or something, besides the virus, now all we see is this thing with the tiger. What is this tiger thing? Like, please clue me in on this. Like, out of nowhere, people are talking about the tiger. Like, is this like a tiger in a movie? Like, is it a show? Like, what the fuck with the tiger?
It's a guy who, first of all, you have Netflix, correct?
I do.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm going to highly recommend you watch it's 7 episodes. You can binge it quickly, and you will binge it quickly because it's that addicting.
Really?
Basically, yeah, it's called Tiger King. And basically, how do I explain this in a nutshell without giving anything away to you? A man from Oklahoma is gay. He owns tigers. He turns straight men gay, or to have them think that they're gay through meth. And he owns a zoo. But they were going to make a reality television show about him, and there's a murder-for-hire suspense linked all throughout. Did that pique your interest at all? Because that's really what it is. And these people exist in our world. I don't want to give anything away. I highly recommend you watch it.
You know, it seems to have gotten people's minds off of the whole situation, man. That's what, like, I was just like, out of nowhere, everybody was like, again, everybody was posting about the virus thing, you know?
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's like, wow, we're like back living in like TV sitcom world or whatever it was. I was like, what is this thing? I keep seeing jokes about the tiger. So I was like, all right, let me ask Pat.
You'll understand every single meme you have seen on Facebook instantly after you watch it. It reminds me of
like, what was that, like, there was like a monkey in a zoo and the kid got too close to the monkey or something, or they shot the monkey or something happened with the monkey or in some, like, I think it was like Cincinnati or something in
a
zoo.
Gorilla.
About,
gorilla.
Yeah, maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah, it was a gorilla, Harambe.
Yes.
The gorilla was actually showing signs of its natural instinct to grab the child and kind of take it away from the
people.
Unfortunately, the child was killed and they put the gorilla down.
Okay, all right. Because I remember that became, like, for whatever reason, everybody was talking about that, and I was like, okay, what's up with the monkey? You know, it's just like the gorilla or whatever.
Settle down there for a second, Charlton Heston. It was a gorilla. It was a damn dirty ape.
The monkey.
The monkey.
Say King Kong, man, the monkey.
The monkey, yeah. The giant goddamn monkey on the World Trade Center.
It's a good monkey.
So.
Oh, man.
Like I said in the beginning, I know we wanted to do some like this or that or gun to your head type situations. I have to jump back into the Van Halen thing because that's what led me to my first like kind of gun to your head. And it's interesting because it came up last week. And mine would be album. It would be, because we talked about it briefly, a favorite album, Eat 'Em and Smile or the 5150 record. That would be my
That's your gun to the head for me?
Yeah, yeah.
Eat 'em and Smile and or 5150.
Yeah, and my basis is on it. On that, my basis of it was that we discussed Eat 'em and Smile being like a staying with the curve of a Van Halen record, whereas 5150 is completely different.
All right, you're going to be surprised at my answer, man.
Okay.
My answer is 5150.
Mine is
and
as well.
I will tell you why, man. Eat 'em and Smile, we already kind of both agree. We established that it's probably a better Van Halen record if we're talking what Van Halen was.
Right.
You know, and had they continued into 86. And Eat 'em and Smile it's more of a Van Halen record, right? That said, I played 5150 a lot more than I played Eat 'em and Smile. I think 5150 cohesively beginning to end is a much better album than Eat 'em and Smile. It doesn't have Ladies Night in Buffalo because I like Ladies Night in Buffalo better than anything on both albums. Even, you know, it comes from Dave's album.
Sure.
But I'd have to go with 5150 on this one.
Yeah, I agree. And for probably every single point you hit on, Dave still had like that carnival-esque persona, whereas I think the 5150 record was just smarter. It's an Eddie Van Halen record. It's, you know, it was him coming into his own. Granted, people hate the keyboard sound. Some of that stuff I really did enjoy. It was him really fine-tuning that after 84, you know, after like 1984, where he just kind of started playing around with it and introducing it. He really kind of honed his craft, I think, on 5150, and it was an Eddie Van Halen record.
And I also think of it as a Sammy record. When I was listening back to the show last week,
that's fair enough.
I forgot that I said that too, and I was like, well, I hope people know what I mean, because when I said, well, it's a Sammy record, I said it's one of Sammy's best records. I hope people realize that I was not just talking about in Van Halen. I meant all around.
All of his records,
you know,
yeah.
Going back to Montrose, man.
The dude was peak. He was definitely peaking.
It was one of the best things he was ever involved with was 5150. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, I mean, Good Enough is, I mean, you know, that's a Sammy song, man. You know, that's, you know.
Summer Nights is a Sammy song.
Yeah, I mean, it's a summertime record, you know.
Yeah,
the music was designed for the sound. It's just unquestionably... for everything that you said about it last week, and for the same reasons when you first reviewed that book, man, about a year or two ago when Monk's book came out, Noel Monk's book, that drive-in down, you know, the parkway headed down the shore with the top down, you know, it's the, you know, our equivalent of the Pacific Coast Highway, the East Coast equivalent. But it's got that vibe, man, that summery vibe. And, again, although I did say there are some things about it that sound dated to me, the other thing is undeniable, that those elements, you don't extract that out of it. You know, 5150 is one of those records.
Mm.
Just great summer-sounding rock and roll, man.
Yeah. 102.7 WNEW is cranking that record, man.
Yeah.
I got my Van Halen fix out.
You said Van Halen, and we're going to stick with Van Halen really, you know, briefly, man, because this was, I did throw this one in there based, you know, coming off of our Van Halen discussion, and I don't remember if this was, I don't think we necessarily did this as gun to the head when Jim and Eric were on the show. what was it? I mean, I guess that was a few years back too.
Sure.
When we were talking about Van Halen, but the question is, fair warning or Van Halen won?
Fair warning. Fair warning is the Van Halen record in their entire catalog, in my opinion. I can think of two people at least that agree with me. Not only is it their greatest record, it is the probably best guitar work Eddie Van Halen has ever done in his life. I don't know if he'll ever reproduce that again. It's just from front to back, I can listen to that record over and over and over again. I love it that much. Every single song on it, Dirty Movies, Sinner Swing. It's the perfect album.
Mm.
Obviously, let me rephrase that. It is one of the perfect albums in history. It's that good of a record. I don't want to say it's the perfect album. I think there's a record that's the perfect album. But I really just, fair warning, I don't even have to second guess it. It just rolls right out of my mouth.
All right.
You?
You know what? Fair warning, you know, it's for the same reasons that you can't reproduce a Jackson Pollock drip painting, man, because it's about the moment, and it's about, like you said, you don't know if Eddie can recreate some of the shit that he did on that record. Guitar-wise, he broke ground. This is where Eddie Van Halen broke even further ground than what he was doing on the first record. I agree with that, man. I got to go with the first Van Halen record. I think I said, man, I don't know, I don't remember what we were talking about in the context of Van Halen, but I remember we all agreed that, you know, Van Halen fans seem to always agree, especially guitarists, that Fair Warning is their best record. You know, there's always this consensus among Van Halen fans, you know, and then everybody else kind of always says, well, the first Van Halen. Oh, yeah, well, you and me, we did a show. We did an entire show on the first Van Halen album. That's
he
right.
He even said it in the book that he felt that Fair Warning was their best work.
Yeah, yeah. My pick, I have to go with Van Halen, with the first Van Halen over Fair Warning, just because I was never a fan growing up. I didn't really, really appreciate Van Halen until like the last, I don't know, 20 years. It was until probably after I was, I don't know, after in my 30s, you know, where I really went back. And I mean, I liked them. I've always liked them. But I was never a fan, you know. There was I wasn't really buying their albums when they were coming out. I think 5150 was actually the first Van Halen album I ever actually went out and bought when it was new.
Whoa.
You know, everything else I went and bought years later. So if I had Van Halen in my collection as a kid, it was because I was recording somebody's record. I was borrowing their albums and recording them onto cassettes.
Yeah.
You know? Because I didn't care enough about them.
Right. The old bootleg days.
Yeah. So, but Van Halen won. That's the one that I was always kind of...
It's a groundbreaker. It broke ground.
Pound for pound, man. You know, song for song. I think Van Halen 1 is definitely the better album. Fair Warning has great moments on it. Fair Warning has some definitely great live staples. It's much more laid back. It's far less commercial.
Yeah, that without a doubt, it's very non-commercial.
And that has a lot working for it in its favor because of that, you know, because a lot of times commerciality kills a record. By just having it be overplayed on, you know, things like radio and MTV.
Well, Unchained, I guess, is a little overplayed.
But, you know, Fair Warning also came out just prior to MTV and about a year before everybody had MTV.
Yeah, and like you can hear about it later. There's a promotional thing that they did for it, and they used to play that as a video on MTV.
Yeah.
Dave had like these red and white spandex on, and he was jumping around. And yeah, that's what they were playing as like a, but you know, it was very low budget. At that point, people were making videos more than, they cared more about videos than they cared about music, I think, some of these people that came out in that era. So
they became the equivalent of singles.
Yeah, they you know, and they were making good videos. Money, they were throwing money at videos. Where Here Comes Van Halen, they were kind of just doing a promotional thing for the record, more or less. And they were like, "Yeah, let's throw it up on MTV. It looks like a live performance."
Yep. That's what they were, man.
Yeah, and then when Van Halen finally got on the video train, in true Van Halen essence, they took it a step further. I mean, some of their videos are just, you know, they're like these little mini Three Stooges movies, you know what I mean? I loved it. Like, Hot for Teacher, what a great video that is, man. It's a great music video. And Dave,
definitely,
you know, man. Then Dave, when Dave split, he took that even further with the Eat 'Em and Smile videos.
Yeah, he kept up that tradition of what he knew how to work MTV. You know,
he
got the most out of MTV. Van Halen, when they put out 5150, I don't even think they had a video. I don't know, did they even make videos for that album?
They did. There's a Dreams, I know, was made to like the Blue Angels flying, the airplanes flying.
That was that was an official video from them?
That's the video. Yeah, that's the, like when you look up Van Halen for that song, I think that's the video. It's got the planes flying and shit.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that was their video. I thought somebody else.
Summer Nights, they have a live performance of it.
When they put out that Live Without a Net or something.
No, I think it was from that record, because Summer Nights, it was released as a single. I think it's from that record. It's just them kind of playing live.
Oh, really? So it's like a studio version synced on top of, dubbed on top of a live?
Yeah, kind of like that.
What do you got next?
I do have another one. I only thought of two.
Okay.
And this one is going to be Back in Black or Highway to Hell Records. Again, staying with records. And this is a band that, you know, I'm not really a huge fan of.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I'm not. And my reasoning is you know, I like the Bon Scott era, hands down. It was something different. It was definitely something different. And then by the time they got Brian Johnson, it just seemed like everything sounded the same, and I think that's what kind of threw me off. I do like Back in Black, but it just kind of threw me off. But I'm going to go with the Bon Scott era stuff. You just can't touch it. It's just, it's really sacred. And there was the uniqueness of his voice. There were some really special moments from those early AC/DC records.
I'll go Highway to Hell too. My favorite AC/DC is, I'm weird, but I like the first three albums the best. Mm-hmm. I mean, my favorite AC/DC record is the first one. Highway to Hell on this one.
Yeah.
High Voltage. I'll go Highway to Hell.
Yeah.
No. High Voltage is the first one.
Right.
Highway to Hell, I'll take definitely over Back in Black. I mean, Back in Black is one of those albums that, like, it's kind of like, it's like U2, the Joshua Tree, where you have to skip over a couple songs before it gets good, because you're so sick and tired of hearing what FM radio killed.
Yeah.
I mean, it is an undeniably great album. Any band would kill to have any of those, you know, the title track or You Shook Me All Night Long, mm-hmm. or Hell's Bells. I mean, they're just monstrous classic. Even Billy Joel was doing Hell's Bells a few years back.
They did it. They did it the night I saw him.
Did he?
His band is fucking tremendous, man.
Yeah.
Billy Joel's band at the Garden for these at monthly shows. Just forget about it. They're lights out. They're second only to the E Street Band. I mean, really, they're that good. Maybe like Prince, New Power Generation, because later Prince stuff, like the New Power Generation, that band was just, that was just some tight rhythmic funk soul, just unbelievable. Some of those records that he did with them.
I guess I kind of inadvertently went on Billy Joel, man, and we're talking about Billy Joel because he's actually my next one.
Oh, okay.
All right, so. This is the inevitable Billy Joel album question, because it comes down to probably his two most well-known, two most associated with albums in his career, man. The back-to-back masterpieces, The Stranger or 52nd Street?
So you're going to make me think a little bit more on this. Yeah, you're going to make me think on this one, man. The Stranger brings back, like, a lot of, like, deep, rooted memories for me, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that one. I am going to go with The Stranger. There's just, I don't know, there's just so much on that record. Even the whistling in The Stranger, Moving Out, yeah. Jesus Christ, Only the Good Die Young.
Yeah.
Just the Way You Are. I mean, it's just, to me, that was, there were some moments in my life where the album was well released already. It was, you know, obviously it was, what, 77 or 78, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, so I was already an adult, but it just brings me, you know, there was a girl that I was dating, and that record, we were just heavily listening to it, and there were other people that we were hanging out with. I was in North Carolina at this time. It's just this group of people that we all, like, kind of always listen to that album, and it just brings me to that place in time, and it's... I'm going to have to go with that one. I mean, not like 52nd Street is a horrible fucking record, because it's not. Big Shot might be one of my favorite songs by him of all time.
I'll tell you what, man. All the masterpieces in music, man, including the Beatles and the Stones and Dylan and the great albums that just all of the masterpieces of the entire rock and roll spectrum, man. Had 52nd Street and Stranger been a double album, it would have been the greatest fucking, by far, the greatest fucking record ever made. I think of them as twins because they both kind of anchor... What is it, anchor? What's the fucking word? Think of like that, like bookends from like September to September, like 77 to 78, and they kind of where Billy Joel kind of opens 78 on the success of The Stranger, and he closes 78 on the success of 52nd Street, right?
Mm.
With the exception of maybe like the RSO label, which like every fucking big album and hit song was on the RSO label in 1978 between Andy Gibb and the Bee Gees and the Grease soundtrack and the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack,
you know?
But besides that, man, I mean, Billy Joel pretty much owned 1978, you know, besides all of the RSO songs.
Yeah.
You know, by whatever bands I already mentioned. Yeah. So with me, it kind of like, I think of them as twins. And I had to really go song for song on this one, man. Like, I was thinking about this. And for years, man, I was never able to answer that question. It's like my own question, but I always thought about it. Like, if I had to really pick between The Stranger and 52nd Street. So here's the way I think about it, man. And I've got the lists in front of my face, man. I just wanted to benefit doing this at home because my computer's in front of me. But
I rattled off a few songs, and you know what I mean?
Just from memory,
yeah. Yeah, you're going to go song for song here. This I like.
No, well, I mean, I'll try to not to make it too long, but, I mean, yeah, you got Moving Out, man, one of the greatest openers, I mean, mm-hmm. possibly the greatest opener of his catalog. The Stranger itself, the title track, one of my very favorite songs, not just by him, but ever. And then you've got a couple of schmaltzy, you know, Just the Way You Are, Scenes from an Italian Restaurant, man. Scenes from an Italian Restaurant makes me gag. Is it a masterpiece song? It was well-crafted,
you know,
song.
Yeah. I need to pause you right there. You know why? Because you've heard way too many people sing that at karaoke. That's ruined that
song. I don't know if I've ever heard anybody sing that song, man.
Oh, I've heard people sing that, and they've ruined it for me, because I do like the song a lot.
I don't know, man. Maybe I go outside or something, but then, you know, Vienna is a great album song that was never a hit, so yeah, Vienna gets another check in you know, that column of, you know, great, man. Only the Good Die Young, that's a song that I've probably worn out in karaoke. It's always my go-to. It's one of my go-to songs when I can't think of anything else and I'm just kind of at total, you know, when Bill is waiting for something and I can't come up with something, so I either go to that or I go to Refugee, probably both to a fault at this point. So, yeah, Only the Good Die Young, one of my favorite songs ever, my favorite song on the album. She's Always a Woman. It's a ballad. I kind of never was a fan of it. And then I have what I think of as kind of clunkers, man, that it's not that they suck. It's not that I don't like them, but they're just not up to the level of the other songs. And Let's Get It Right the First Time and Everybody Is a Dream. So in with The Stranger, man, it has a couple of things working against it when I put it up against 52nd Street, because 52nd Street, man, is solid. Big Shot, Honesty, which is kind of like, it's not, I know there's one other one.
He's a piano man after all, so you know he's going to have songs like that, and Always a Woman. He's going to have those. He's a piano guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's just the balladeer, if you will. And you know, I mean, there's some great wedding. He's done some of that stuff is really powerful, like wedding music.
Yeah, yeah. My Life, a great song. It's a little overplayed, but it's, you know, you really hear his Beatles influence in there.
Yeah, oh, it's heavy. Plus, that was, that was the... wasn't that the soundtrack for that TV show with Tom Hanks?
Yeah, Bosom Buddies.
Bosom Buddies, right.
I think they used it. I think they licensed it.
Yeah, they licensed it. Yeah.
But, you know, My Life is, I mean, we take that song for granted because it's so overplayed. And we say, yeah, you know, it's kind of one of his more schmaltzy songs, because he got this, like, schmaltzy section of his songs where, you know, you can just, like, put it into the schmaltzy folder. You know, and, you know, My Life is probably the best one out of this, probably the ones that I can take the most, probably just because it reminds me of being a little kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, like that whole little part of I never told you were a victim, whatever he says, whatever the line is in the middle of the bridge. But anyway, that is so Beatles in here. Like, he says something, and then you hear, like, the background vocals, I never said you had to. And that was, it was, like, totally designed for, like, Lennon and Harrison to be singing background vocals on that, you know? Zanzibar, you know, as you know, Zanzibar is my favorite Billy Joel song, period. Stiletto. Zanzibar and Stiletto belong together. They're just two album deep cuts that are so, like, up to the level of just masterpiece. It's up there with all of his best material. Rosalinda's Eyes, a song I wasn't crazy about until I saw it on Freaks and Geeks. Underappreciated song. Half a Mile Away. Should have been a hit. I don't know why that wasn't a fucking hit. It, for some reason, I don't know, all these years later, it always reminded me of Don't Stop Me Now from Queen. And I remember when Jazz came out. Jazz and 52nd Street came out at the same time, and I remember we were me and Eric, we were listening to 52nd Street and what's the album? Oh yeah, Jazz. And we were both, he had the A track, so we used to listen to him, and I used to confuse Half a Mile Away with Don't Stop Me Now. Huh. Neither of them have the same beat, but they both have, there's something lyrically and melodically that's very similar in both songs. And I can't explain it right now because it's not on the surface of my head. But for the same reasons I love Don't Stop Me Now, I always liked Half a Mile Away. Bohemian Rhapsody kind of made the song a little bit bigger than it was prior to, like, 2 years ago. That's maybe a good thing. Until the Night, maybe the only possible clunker on the album. And it's 52nd Street, this jazzy, soulful title track, which obviously is – always overlooked, but I got to go with 52nd Street.
Hmm.
My long-winded answer, man.
Yeah, that's all right. Mine had more of a personal... Yeah, I just felt my... It touched me more emotionally because of where I was.
That'll do it. That'll do it every time, man.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so now you said... What was your favorite song? It might be your, Zanzibar might be your favorite Billy Joel song.
Zanzibar is my favorite Billy Joel song. And it's up on my all-time favorites list, too. Zanzibar would probably make top 25.
Believe it or not, my favorite Billy Joel song is not even one of the classic records. His songs, I guess you consider his music, all his records kind of classic. It's on Stormfront, Down East or Alexa.
I remember you telling me that.
I love that song. It's just... the story that he tells, the music. I mean, it sounds like you're on that ship. It really, like, you're getting ready to pull in and fuel up in the Long Island Sound, and it always makes me feel that way, man. I just love it. It's got, like, a really big drum sound on it, like almost like one of those kettle drums, you know. It's thunderous almost, and like it sounds like a sailing song. I love it so much.
It reminds me of the whole time period of when that album came out, the most, more so than any song on it. You know, not even we didn't start the fire. It's a song that I always liked, man. It's, you know, Stormfront wasn't a bad album, man. It wasn't a bad album.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like that song. It's funny because Vanessa was trying to get me to sing Billy Joel. Like, she wanted me to do something different. She's like, do Down Easter Alexa. So last night we were out. I'm like, I can't do that song. I was like, ask Pat. You know, she's like, why can't you do the song? Why can't I? I was like, get Pat. That's his favorite song, man. You know? And because I remember you had mentioned it to me a few times. In fact, you may have even said it on the show, man.
I probably have.
There's so much shit we talked about.
Oh, yeah. He played it the night that I saw him, too. And it's just, oh, man. Just tremendous, tremendous song.
Oh, so you actually got it live, man.
Yeah, yeah. Just tremendous song. And I could literally just, you know, it's in my, you know, I have a few lists on iTunes, no joke, that, you know, no secret that I use Apple. So I have a bunch of different playlists depending on the mood that I'm in. Some of them are just random shit. But there's one that has that song, and it's a regular rotated list. And that song is definitely on it. I've been listening to a lot of just, like, I don't know, you know, when Neil Peart died, I was listening to a lot of Rush, but I was listening to albums, listening to a lot of Pink Floyd albums. But there's some times when I just want to hear good songs, and that's on that. But that Billy Joel song is on that list.
Awesome, awesome.
Yeah.
I'll go really, really quick on this one because I know we're pushing time here.
No, that's okay.
All right, a couple of we talked about both of these records in our debut album episode. But we never put them against each other. A nice debut album, 1967 mashup. Are You Experienced or the first Doors album? Jimi Hendrix or the Doors on the debut albums?
I'm going to go with the Doors here. All my guitar player friends are going to kill me.
I might back you up, man.
All my poetic friends are going to adore me. there was something about Jim Morrison when I learned who he was and what the Doors were that I just fell in love with. There was this mystery about Jim. The music was really cool and sometimes carnivalesque. Three-piece band, you know, I mean, studio-wise, they had other musicians, yeah, but live, there was the three of them. I fell in love with Jim and that mystery and that mystique and the lyrics that he, you know, everything, the poetic lyrics. I did. I was just, as a singer, he was it, man. It was a cross between, I wanted a cross between Jim Morrison and David Lee Roth and, you know, try and meet somewhere in the middle of that. And then you got me, and it's a fucking really screwed up place to be. But I'm going to go with the Doors just for my sheer love of Jim Morrison, and I'm not taking anything away from Jimi Hendrix. The man is just brilliant. People still playing his music to this day. He was played a lot. You know, I mean, he was turning Beatles songs into hits again, turning Dylan songs into hits, period. He was funky. You know, he's everything you want your musician to be. Everything
right.
You wanted your musician to be was Jimi Hendrix, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. And arguably one of the greatest players, you know, guitar players that we'll ever know.
I'm going to go with the Doors as well, man. Not taking anything away from Jimmy, but Are You Experienced is the best of Are You Experienced. You want to hear it, turn on FM radio. You'll hear it.
Okay.
You know?
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry, Mike, but that record hasn't aged well sound quality-wise. The songs have. The songs are terrific. Sound quality wise, though, it still just sounds, it almost sounds flat, in my opinion.
I know what you mean. His other albums are better produced, I'd say. I haven't heard the album in years. I should actually put it on. I mean, I do know what you mean.
Every time I hear something off of it, I'm just like, man, it almost sounds like it's missing something. I mean, maybe because it's just focused on Jimmy, and rightly so. I don't know. Maybe just the technology has gotten so much better.
Or what about the possibility that, and this is where so many groups fall into this, you're so used to seeing live footage of him and hearing the best of him live, man, and such explosive footage and live versions of so much of that material that when you hear a studio version, it just sounds tame.
Mm.
you know, is it could be that. I don't know. But I think that's the case with me. But I with Hendrix, man, if the question were Acts as Bold as Love or Electric Ladyland, the situation would be definitely different. I would definitely choose those albums over the Doors. The Doors record, I mean, yeah, is some of the, a lot of it is overplayed on radio. Light My Fire, obviously, Break On Through, Alabama Song. But it's the stuff that's in between, Soul Kitchen and the Crystal Ship and I Looked at You, End of the Night, Take It As It Comes. Now I'm reading the list. It's definitely an album that I would put on and listen beginning to end before I put on Are You Experienced in this case. You know,
yeah,
I think has a few.
I'm glad you went into further detail on all the songs on the record too. I kind of wanted to save that and let you and see where your argument went with it, because I agree with you on a front to end. I could listen to that and have no issue with it whatsoever. You know, it's going to put you in a mood that you might not already be in. You want to get to there, whatever. The case
and plus, like Acts as Bold as Love, where I think the songs are much better. They're a lot more fleshed out. They're a lot more.
Is Butterflies on that?
Butterflies. Butterflies. I'm thinking Butterflies and Zebras.
No, not that.
And the Wind. No. No, there's nothing. There's not anything
that
on there.
I can't even think of the name of the song right now. It's on the singles, the movie, the singles. It's on that soundtrack.
No, I don't know what that is, man. And Electric Ladyland, one of my favorite albums ever is Electric Ladyland. But, yeah, so I would definitely take the Doors, man, over that one. Got to go with that. And I had, where am I now? I had a few more.
That's all right.
Blizzard of Oz or Holy Diver?
Blizzard.
I go Blizzard, too.
Yeah, Randy Rhoads. Just Randy. All I have to say is Randy Rhoads. not to mention that I'm an enormous Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne fan. And Blizzard, man, the only better than Blizzard was Diary, probably.
Yeah, I would definitely go with Blizzard. I wasn't a big, you know, respect to Ronnie James Dio. I was never a big Dio fan. Blizzard, as you know, I chose that album in my top debut albums. It's flawless, really, man. It's a flawless album.
I
can't really go that much further into detail. You know, I mean, obviously it's Randy Rhoads that makes that album what it is.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question about that.
Right.
But nonetheless, it is an Ozzy album. And that, I was thinking along the lines of obviously the obvious ex-Sabbath vocalists, their first solo albums away from Sabbath, so that became the choice there.
Right.
And so my last one is, this one's inspired by my nephew, who is...
Hey, hang on one second. Don't feel rushed. I'll explain something to the audience. Before we got into recording tonight, I was telling Mike, 9 o'clock our time, 9 p.m. our time, I kind of had to roll by then. Don't feel rushed, though, Mike. I mean, it's not like I'm not set on 9 o'clock. Oh, my God, I got to get out the door. So don't feel set on that. I know you're like,
yeah,
oh,
but
real
also,
quick, real quick. We're
yeah,
good.
Also, the longer the show is, the more I have to edit. So, I'm thinking how many hours I'm going to be working tonight into tomorrow. So.
Oh, you lazy bastard. Give the people what they want.
I'm thinking of myself here. You think I care about what you have to do next, man? I don't care what
love
your plans are.
I
plans?
Love it.
Fuck your plans, man. I got to work and do this shit. I did have one more, though. My nephew is, I don't know why, man. I mean, I can really trace the origins of it, but I don't have that kind of desire to do that right now. But because it goes back years since he was a baby, but my nephew, who is 6, is totally fucking obsessed with Eddie and Iron Maiden. And more so the Eddie character and all of the album covers and the various different Eddies on each one. And I didn't know this, man, but there's an entire market dedicated to Eddie and Eddie toys, man. I mean, I knew that there were figures when they released the Eddie figures, but there's so many of them, man, and they all have their nicknames.
if I'm not mistaken, Todd McFarlane might have gotten involved and did a line, a toy line, and big business, huge business. And the amount of detail that goes into them is just, I don't have anything like that. A good friend of mine does, and not necessarily the Eddie stuff, but some of the Todd McFarlane stuff, the amount of detail. He has, like, some Spawn stuff, and he was a comic book writer, Todd McFarlane. The amount of detail that goes into every single one of these things is mind-blowing. You could pick one up in your hand and look at it and never see – I mean, you'll never see something twice. It's just unreal. Another friend of mine has a pair of Chucks, the Converse, mm-hmm. with Eddie on them and the British flag on the other side. They are sharp, man.
Those I've seen.
Good-looking shoe.
So far, that's about the only thing that my nephew hasn't asked for.
That's fantastic.
You know, like, every day, man. So, like, the next package comes in the mail. Is Somewhere in Time coming today? Is Somewhere in Time coming today? I'm getting, he knows all of the Legacy of the Beast, man. And, like, all these things, man, like the tour, man, Legacy of the Beast. That was never a record, you know, but he knows Legacy of the Beast. You know, he knows Book of Souls. He's like, that's Book of Souls, Eddie. That's, No Prayer for the Dying, Eddie. That's Fear of the Dark, Eddie. That's Somewhere in Time, Eddie. You know, and he just knows them from the album covers, and he matches them to the album title. And it's kind of strange, man, seeing these Maiden records that we grew up on over 30 years ago. Albums that I had gotten, man, some stuff that I bought with, like, allowance money from, like, mowing the lawn in, like, 1983, you know, that I still have that he's now obsessed with. So it's crazy, man. And he's finally, first it was all about Eddie, and just, like, Eddie was just, like, this comic book thing, like, this cartoon that he drew pictures of and that he played with. And now he's finally getting into the music. So now he's there and he's playing air guitar to Power Slave. And he knows the songs on Power Slave, and he's into, I mean, he's getting into it. It's crazy. He's 6 years old, man. He's in kindergarten. But anyway, with that, my question is, Peace of Mind or Power Slave?
Man, this is Peace of Mind.
Now, Peace of Mind is...
Die With Your Boots On might be one of my favorite songs by them.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Man, son of a bitch. I'm going to go with that just because it has my favorite song on it.
I'll go with that,
another
too.
Great, solid record, though, man.
I'll go Peace of Mind, too, man.
Flight of Icarus, too, though, isn't that? That's on it, too. So I'm going to go,
Yeah, Flight is on Peace of Mind. The Trooper's on Peace of Mind. Revelation, my favorite song, is on there.
Yeah.
Still Life is on there. Sun and Steel is on there.
Wow, we both agree on that one. That was
Peace of Mind. Definitely Peace of Mind. Power Slave, great album. I found that if I had to go song for song, well, we immediately stopped at Lost for Words. Is that instrumental, third song on the album. It's a clunker. Why is it there? It shouldn't have been on there. And I was never crazy about Back in the Village. So as far as I'm concerned, Power Slave has two holes. And there are, you know, there's great, great material on Power Slave. Rime of the Ancient Mariner. The title track, Aces High, 2 Minutes to Midnight, Flash of the Blade, The Duelist. But, you know, there are two holes as far as just my opinion. Peace of Mind has one clunker. That's Quest for Fire. It sounds cartoonish. It sounds ridiculous. It's the most ridiculous lyrics, I think, this side of Spinal Tap, man. Peace of Mind. It's my favorite Iron Maiden record. I think it's probably their best record. But
I like favorite record by them. Another one takes me to a specific time in my life. It might have been Somewhere in Time.
Yeah, man. Great.
I really dig that record.
We listened to that about 2 weeks ago. We were on a thing like after school because we do this thing where we do online school in the morning, and then in the afternoon he gets his Eddie time.
Right.
You know, it's called Eddie time. You know, that's his choice, man. He's like, that's what he wants to fucking do, man. He wants to, he's like, when we're done with school, can we go listen to Iron Maiden? I'm like, you sure can, man. Absolutely. You know?
The only way that question gets better is if it'd be two things. Can we go listen to Kiss or can we go listen to Dylan? Mike might explode.
Yeah, he's not ready for Bob, man. Bob is like, you know, Bob is like high school, man.
No, yeah, but that would be the only thing that would be better coming out of his mouth would be he wants to go have Bob time or kiss time.
What,
he's gonna
Dylan,
have
Dylan is like fully appreciated, man. Like, you know, well, if you're human, man, you know, that's why Bruce, man, some of the songs that people can relate to, man.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah,
hey,
I will leave Bob out of the picture for now.
Yeah, no. Hey, did you see, speaking of Bruce, did you watch the Netflix, his Broadway show?
Yeah, I did see that. I saw that when it was...
I don't know if we did we discuss it? What were your thoughts on it? I enjoyed it tremendously.
I don't remember talking about that with
either.
Too many people, man. But, yeah, it was, I mean, it was so many, everything we love Bruce, I love about Bruce, man, in that. I can't relate to the Bruce hatred of, you know,
right.
Just watch that. How could you,
there's emotion.
How could you say that you hate Bruce Springsteen and Bruce Springsteen sucks and in what come out of that, man, you're not fucking human, man.
you know, come out of that.
You
know whose opinion that show changed? Howard Stern actually got tickets to that show. He went with Jimmy Kimmel and completely changed his take on Bruce Springsteen. A couple of big parts that stuck out. One was obvious, and that was when he talked about Clarence. It was just touching to see him talk about him like that. It was cool to see. And as always, you see him do 10th Avenue Freeze Out. You know, the changes made uptown when the big man joined the band and the place erupts. Still, the man's been dead for how many years now? God rest his soul.
Yeah.
And still, you know what I mean? The place still goes fucking batshit crazy when he sings that line, man. And he lets them do it, too. That was his good goddamn friend who passed away and bandmate for fucking so long. And the other thing that I think, you know, he kind of joked about, he's like, I wasn't the working man. I watched my dad be the working man. You know what I mean? And it was just, it makes me understand growing up, the song Growing Up by him more by that statement. He didn't do it in the show, but that it made me understand that a little bit more. You know what I mean? It really did. 'Cause he was off playing fantasy stuff and, you know, taking the spaceships to the stratosphere and this and that and the other thing. But his dad was that blue-collared guy that everybody thinks Bruce is. And he's like, that's not me. I got a kick out of that, man. That wasn't me. I didn't want to work. I wanted to play this guitar for my life, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man.
I have another shout-out, man. I want to throw another fan shout-out because, you know,
I wonder if your shout-out is the same as mine. Go ahead.
I think it's going to be Vic Goley. The guy's a number, again, a guy who's just been with us from the beginning, always voices his concerns with the show, his opinions with the show. Did we suck? Did we not suck? He's been a driving force in some stuff that we might have talked about on occasion. Vic is up there with Rob as well, man.
And sometimes Vic is the only motherfucker who responds, man. Only person to respond. Sometimes we'll put stuff out there, and then finally, after like a day or two, man, you'll see like one hit, and then you'll look, and it's always Vic. So he supports, man.
He
is there, you know.
Where Rob released our show early to the masses, Vic is very very heavy on our social media platforms. And,
yep.
You know, again, I want to throw another shout out. I might make this try and make this a weekly or biweekly thing, just throwing a shout out to a fan or something like that who always has some great things to say and great conversation starters, great support, obviously. I want to thank you all. Every single person gets a shout out for that, for the support factor. Not taking anything away from Vic because that is my shout out of the week.
I've got two shout-outs to our friends Vanessa and Laura, who continue to repost and promote us as if it's their own gig, you know. You know, we know who has stuck by us. You know, those people are never lost on us. So, but those two get a shout-out this week. But, yeah, you know, I guess, you know, I just want to thank everybody who supports the podcast. We do we do this as a labor of love. You know, we definitely don't do it for the money, Pat. You know, it's always nice to know that.
I'd be quarantined on a fucking island by now if we did it for the money.
Yeah, man. But, you know, people are finding some sort of solace or, you know, comfort, if you will, in the distraction that these shows offer.
I hope so, too. You know, we also got to thank you, me being a listener as well as a co-host, you know, your labor of love and of the show and doing what you do behind the scenes, you know, the man behind the curtain, more or less. And, you know, it feels good again. I got that vibe last week when I listened to the show. I was like, wow, we weren't stepping on each other. We sounded, you know, like we had some stuff to say. And it just, I finished recording it with you, and I was just like, wow, that went well. I can't wait to hear that. And I haven't felt like that in a long time. Right? I think you would agree with that.
Because we haven't done it in a long time.
Right,
so
right.
You get... sometimes you need the distance.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe we're a little complacent. Maybe I don't think we're complacent. And, I don't know.
You mean like towards the while the show was still going on, like in the end of the
work? Yeah. Yeah, like towards our last few shows, you know, when we kind of put it to rest, but when we kind of just stepped aside for a little bit and just to catch our breath a little bit.
I didn't know going into the last one. I mean, we're going back to. I had a really, really shitty end of 2018 with so much shit, just layers and layers of bullshit in the end of 2018 personally, and just things going on at the same time, like 3 or 4 or 5 really, really shitty things going on at the same time. So the podcast was kind of like, by the time we did that Christmas episode, I was just like, thank God. For a couple of months. Then when we got together again where we did 2 or 3 episodes of that where we started to get back into it, and Marissa was joining us, and I want to call Marissa because I want to get, you know, I want to have some conversations with Marissa while
this
is going on too.
We can merge the calls to where the three of us could be on.
I would hope so. But yeah, at that point, that's where it was going to – I was just like, how are we going to continue this? Because I was just like, well, I didn't have anything to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have – it was just like I was hurting for topics. It just wasn't a good period.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, sometimes you need the distance from that. And, I mean, even now, you know, I mean, had this whole thing not happened, you know, we probably wouldn't be doing this, obviously. You know, we wouldn't have – you know, we got the
I don't know about that because we had some discussions, albeit brief, and you know, Rob got involved in a couple of conversations with us, and we were tinkering around a little bit there. Would it have happened as quickly? Maybe not.
Mm-mm.
I can agree.
That's
with you
what
there.
I mean.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But we were getting there.
Yeah.
You know, we were starting to chisel away at each other, if you will.
Yeah, because my priority has been to finish the book.
Yeah.
And get it out there. It'll be out hopefully in the fall. It's going to be an ebook. That's about all I'm, you know, ready to talk about at this point. But, yeah, I mean, it was something that did take up a lot of my time. And when it got to the point where I wasn't happy with the shows and then I was sitting down at a computer to mix and edit an hour show that took me, you know, 6 hours to do, and for, you know, I just was not in it anymore. My heart wasn't in it anymore, and I was just like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that I don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it now. So, you know, it was just kind of, you know, the thing just kind of fell away, man. And
yeah.
So, you know, it is what it is. And here we are having this discussion, you know, and people will hear this, I guess. I don't know that I'll even keep this part in the show, but maybe I'll edit this out, you know.
No, don't edit it out. They're part of our family, man. They can hear what, you know, they can hear that all, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring us closer. Get them to hear a little bit from the inner sanctum of the Rock Under Fire halls.
So that's basically it. You know, it's we have a lot of the same people that still support us. That's good. They, you know, again, you could tell the people that, you know, do appreciate what we do.
Yes.
You know, I mean, and there are a lot of people that listen on, you know, what was iTunes, I guess, is now Apple Podcasts.
Yep.
And listening on Spotify and a lot of numbers, because our YouTube numbers are low. Like, I look at our YouTube hits, and our YouTube hits are so low compared to the other numbers. And so I don't know who's listening on Apple, but I look at, you know, I look at the statistics.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we got downloads all over the world, man. And again, our numbers are small. We have a very, very small audience, but we do have people who listen. So it's good to know that there are people out there listening. So, you know, that this does not go unappreciated to you people out there who do listen. I don't know who you are. We may never meet any of you, but it's technology is a weird thing, man. You know, where you and me are having this conversation, and then within the next 48 hours, it's going to be accessible to, you know, somebody out in Germany or something.
Yep.
You know, so it's kind of cool. It's weird, but you know what? I think I'm finally at peace with it. It's a good thing.
Awesome.
So I guess we're trying out this new weekly pattern until further notice. Again, we've been out of commission for the better part of the year. So at this point, we can say that we're back for now. But I'll tell you what, if you're listening, and I'll wrap this up really quick, we need your input if you listen. So please leave us your comments. Leave us comments anywhere you can, whether it be on YouTube, on Facebook, whatever it is. Leave us comments on what you'd like to hear discussed on the show. We're gonna remain a blank canvas for discussion in the coming weeks. So your ideas, your input is always welcome and encouraged. So, you know, all right, Mikey D here, Pat Ivanisky. That's our show this week.
Much love to everybody out there, and be safe. Mike, be safe.
Peace.
Pouring on me, bad news keeps pouring on me, bad news keeps pouring on me.